Hello and welcome to Hophead's Ed's Breweries Highlight. I'm your host, Curtis Taylor, and I have Clay Robinson on the phone. Hello, Clay, and welcome to Brewery Highlights.
Hi there.
Thanks for taking the time to visit with me, and I'm glad that we've our worlds have crisscrossed here so that we can sit and chat about Sun King Brewing.
Well, happy to be here.
Well, Clay is the brewer. Are you head brewer? Are you co-brewer?
One of the brewers slash owners. The concept for Sun King came from myself and my partner Dave Cole. Dave is currently our head brewer, and over the past few years I've stepped away from brewing and now work a lot more on running a business and a lot of the other elements that go with running a brewery.
Okay, so Clay is kind of wears a lot of hats there at Sun King Brewing, and which is located in Indianapolis, Indiana. Sun King Brewery was handpicked by Hophead's Head readers to represent the Indianapolis Colts in this season's of Hophead Huddle. For those of you who don't know, Hophead Huddle is a feature I write every week during the NFL season. Hophead Huddle is part craft beer poll and part beer pairing extravaganza, and each week Hopheads predict, sometimes accurately, the winner of each game just by picking the team they think has the best craft beer. I try to help them make informed decisions by describing some of the more unique beers and supplying beer pairing suggestions for each game. This year, I'm adding a little more content to each of the representative breweries by interviewing the head brewers or owners slash, any whatever hats they wear.
Owner slash brewer slash whatever needs to be done. I clean toilets and sweep up from
time. I was going to say, because I like the descriptions of everyone. So you've got all of the official titles. And then you've got, underneath yours, the last one is glorified janitor. And I like Andy. His is El Gato Grande.
Yes, that's right.
He's the big cat, evidently. And then,
he's the big cat and the doctor of style.
There it is. And so you've got to take a look at, go meet the crew on sunkingbrewing.com. So, we've picked Sun King to represent the Colts, and that's where Clay and Sun King Brewery come in. And while you're listening to the podcast, go to sunkingbrewing.com. Take a look at all their offerings as we talk about them. You can also find Sun King Brewery on Facebook at Sun King Brewing Company, or you can follow them on Twitter at Sun King Brewing. Okay, now that I've got all the serious business out of the way, it's time to get to Clay and learn a little bit about Sun King Brewing. So, Clay, whenever I start interviewing a brewer, I'm always interested in what is the first beer that you can remember tasting?
My love affair with beer goes back to when I was probably around four. And my grandfather used to drink those Michelob bottles with the gold wrapper on the top,
kind of
short, stubby, maybe 10-ounce bottles.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether it was, the fact that it was my grandfather or the silver or the gold foil that was on the bottle. But as a four-year-old, my mom used to always have to stop me and be like, no, that's not for you. but I would always sneak sip of my grandfather's Michelob. So at 4 years old, I knew that I loved beer.
It's interesting that grandfathers play an important role in that. I mean, it's the same on my end too, although mine was not nearly as – it was a white – it was the generic beer. It just said beer on the outside.
I love that can.
Yeah. But I don't remember I remember he gave me – and it was – and it came in like, a six-ounce can. Maybe these were little short cans. And I remember distinctly not liking it at all. But it sounds like you had a hop thing going for you to begin with.
Yeah, I really did enjoy sneaking sips of it. And then, later on, when I was in my, the 14, 15, 16 range, I would go on fishing trips with my dad and all of his friends in Canada, and we'd go for a week, and everyone there drank beer. So, once I got to be about 14 or 15, towards the end of the week, always my older cousins or some of the guys would be like, here, have a beer. So I would get to have a beer and have that kind of outdoorsy, after a long day of fishing, you're camping out in the wilderness kind of thing. So,
mm-hmm.
It's always kind of been interwoven around me. And, when I was in college, I worked at an English pub, my way through college, and the owner of the bar or the pub felt like if you worked a hard day's an honest hard day's work, at the end of the day, you deserved a beer. And so even at 19, if you were under 21, you could have the beer. You just had to have it in the kitchen, and they had six taps and 60 different bottles. And I just would pick different beers.
Oh,
and that's
wow.
When I really fell in love with beer.
through that? Is that where you decided you wanted to become a brewer, or was there another moment where you just decided that I want to start making this?
Sure. I had a couple of friends in college that homebrewed, and I would enjoy some of their beers. One of them actually started doing some part-time work at a brewery about a half hour away from where I went to school, and would bring down beers from the Lafayette Brewing Company in Lafayette, Indiana. And I was really impressed with what they were doing beer-wise. It actually never really dawned on me that I could do that or make my own beer until 2 years after I got out of college, which would have been 1999. I was still working in restaurants, and I started working at Rock Bottom Restaurant and Brewery in downtown Indianapolis. And at that time, Rock Bottom was a pretty growing company. You know, they had 30 some breweries around the country. You did beer training, and that was really the first time Tom, who was the head brewer at the time, was you know, a really great guy. We got along really well, and it was the first time I'd met somebody like myself who was brewing beer. You know, I knew beer was brewed. I knew you could home brew, but it was my first real introduction to kind of pub brewing and the craft beer microbrewed scene. And so I started asking Tom a lot of questions about beer, you know, seeing the equipment. I grew up, my dad ran a dairy on the east side of Indianapolis. So I grew up around stainless steel equipment and processes and these things. And it really kind of harkened me back, the equipment and things that were used in the brewery. And after a couple months of waiting table, Tom one day came to me and he said, do you ever think about making beer for a living? And I said, I had no idea it was a job that somebody like me could have until I met you. And he said, well, I've got an opening coming up, and I really think you'd be good at it. You've got a good head on your shoulders and a good work ethic. So what do you think? And I got excited about it, and he said, well, before you get excited, let me let you know a few things. It's hot, it's sweaty, it's sticky, and it's dirty. You're basically a glorified janitor, but at the end of the day, you get to kick back with a pint of beer that you made. And he sipped his pint of beer, smiled, and said, it's fucking delicious.
There you go.
So that was at that point in time where it kind of struck me. And so honestly, I'd never homebrewed. My wow. first batch of beer was a 10-barrel batch of an oatmeal stout, which at that point in time was actually one of my favorite styles of beer. And from the minute that the grain hit the water in the mash tun and the smells were released and you go through the processes of it and run through the whole brew day, the first brew I did, I was hooked. I was like, this is what I want to do with my life.
Well, that's pretty awesome. You know, you don't start with a partial mash. You don't start with, or extract, you don't start with partial mash. You don't do any of that. You go right to what, 600-gallon batch? That was your first brew?
Yeah. 310 gallons.
Oh, 300 gallons. Brew. Okay. Yeah. Yep. I'm doubling the batch sizes for you already. So, you know, there's on the website, there's a good description of kind of the background and how you met Dave and how everything was, how you two kind of came together. But for people who aren't going to take time to go read the website, what was the connection between you and Dave, and then you know, what was kind of the push for you two to start Sun King?
Well, Dave and I both had been brewing beer professionally around Indianapolis for around 10 years when we started Sun King. Actually, right after I got out of college and I had that love for craft beer, I would throw parties. And Dave worked at a little brewery on the north side that sold kegs. So I would drive up and Dave would actually help me load kegs in my car. And a few years later, when I was working at the brewery downtown, the Ram Restaurant and Brewery opened down the street, and we went to go meet the new brewers and say hi and welcome them to the neighborhood. And lo and behold, Dave was one of those guys. And we kind of had that, wait a second, where do I know you from? And we got around to, I used to help you load kegs. So on Fridays after work, I'd go down and we'd have beers and hang out and talk about life and beer. I actually left Rock Bottom for a few years, but stayed in touch with Dave. And then his brewery was expanding production for another location. So he called me because he needed somebody who knew how to run a brewery. I was out of work and trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. And getting out of brewing and being away from it and working construction for a few years made me realize how much I really missed brewing. So I took the job with Dave in 2005, and very early on we started a conversation, which was, what would you do if you could open your own brewery? That conversation took on a larger ethereal role of more of like, what was the best job you had, worst job you had, what do you love about that job? What do you hate about this place? What drives you crazy? What are your pet peeves here and there? How do you want to treat your people? How would you want to treat your people? What kind of community involvement? This whole kind of cultural range of things surrounding beer and brewing as we continued to brew. And we were locked in a really small brewery. We had 6 beers we had to keep on tap at all times, and 1 beer that we could play around with every month, 1 handle, maybe 2 if we were lucky. So, you know, the essence of really what we wanted to do was along the same lines. We got along really well. Along the way, over the course of a few years, we both got approached by people with money who wanted to open breweries. And we quickly realized in our conversations with them that if we helped someone else who opened their brewery, we would not be running our brewery. We would be doing their thing, and that we stood a good chance of in 5 years doing something that we love for somebody that we didn't necessarily agree with. Mm-hmm. So that was really the catalyst where it's like, wait, why do we want to open these other people's breweries? You're a brewer. I'm a brewer. We have great ideas. Let's put this thing together. So we spent another year or so trying to plan things and get things worked out before we hit a point where something needed to give. So in the summer of 2008, I quit my job on a leap of faith, cashed in my 401k, went to Alaska where my fiance is from, spent a few months helping her parents with a construction project, cleared my head, came home, locked myself in the house, wrote the business plan based on all of our concepts. Talked to a friend of ours who had agreed to come on and organize our funding, got the business funded, bought a used brewing system, found a warehouse downtown, and built out a brewery in a period of about a year. And in July of 2009, we opened up Sun King.
One of the things I find interesting about people who are just brewers at heart is it's so organic in that it's not necessarily you thought about doing it, but it was part of you, and you were just kind of meant to do that. Just at some point you're going to get it figured out and you're going to do it. It may take several years, but it's still part mm-hmm. of a part of who you are. So the Sun King concept, so it's the logo and everything else. What can you kind of tell us about the meaning? Sure. I mean, why did you pick Sun King as a name and the logos and everything?
As you can imagine, naming a brewery is really hard. It's actually getting even harder with over 2,500 breweries in the United States and another 1,000 breweries in planning. So we had a number of ideas and names that we kind of thought of along the way, and we were hammering things back and forth as we were doing some planning. You know, we actually, for a while, were working with a group of people, a chef and a restaurant manager, and we were going to open a brew pub, and we did a lot of meetings with them. And finally, between opening a restaurant and opening a brewery, there's so much capital, and we were having a lot of issues getting anything off the ground. And one day, I just looked at Dave after a frustrating meeting of going nowhere, and I'm like, we're not getting this done. I don't care about food or a restaurant. You don't care about food or a restaurant, so what if we just make beer? And he said, do you think it could work? And I was like, I don't know. I'm running all the numbers. I'm sure there are plenty of breweries that just make beer. Mm-hmm. I'll run some numbers and look at it. And, you know, it was a little bit of a different business, but you eliminate servers and bar staff and food. And, you know, I was always irritated at my previous brewpub jobs that somebody would come in and on an online review say, well, the beer was really good, but my server sucked and my burger was overcooked and this right. and that. And by the end of the review, you know, our beers would get degraded because they had a bad experience with some other part. Mm-hmm. So that seemed kind of enticing. And then we actually looked around Indianapolis and realized that it's a 2 million metropolitan area, and all we had were about 10 or 12 brew pubs. So we had no local brewery. No one was specifically crafting beer for distribution to bars and restaurants around the city. And that was when it kind of took off, and it's like, wow, this is actually a really good idea. We've got to go with this. So we started moving forward on that. We were looking for a name. And like I said earlier, we had 6 beers we had to make day in and day out. And so we really early on decided if we opened our own brewery, we really only wanted to have 3, maybe 4 beers maximum, so that we would be able to focus on seasonal and specialty beers. And the whole essence of Sun King is seasonal and specialty beers. So we release at least 3, if not 4 new beers every single month. So if you come to our tasting room, or you visit from out of town, or even you live in town and you come back week by week or go to bars and restaurants, there's always a new beer popping up. We do rotating seasonal wheat beers. We do lagers, we do porters and stouts, we do barrel-aged beers, we do all of these different things, and they come out at different times of the year. We do fun stuff that's crazy and uses local ingredients because we want to do it. So seasonality was the essence of it. And the next best name that we had come up with for a seasonal themed brewery was Solstice. And as a good pagan, I thought Solstice was a pretty good name. And the only real market research we did in the process of looking at doing this plan was my degree in college is in rhetoric. So I have a degree in rhetoric with an area concentration in business. So I've talked a lot for a very long time. And so I went out to bars and I talked to people about names and word associations. And I would say, what do you think about Solstice? And overwhelmingly, the response was a deadpan stare. And I'm like, you know, Solstice, it's the change of season, summer, winter, fall, you know, seasonality. And they just kind of go, I'm not getting it. Okay. So we made a joke that Solstice became too esoteric. And then one day Dave came in to work and he said, I've got it. And I said, what is it? He said, I got the name. And I said, what do you got? And he said, Sun King. And I literally looked at him and I said, that's a terrific name for a brewery if you're in Phoenix, Arizona, or Southern California, or Colorado, somewhere where the sun shines all the time. And Dave is a dry smartass, so he dragged me to the window, and it was a gray, like, March morning, and he goes, what's that? And I was like, what? And he's like, the thing pointing the rays coming through the clouds? I'm like, well, it's the sun. And he's like, yes, Clay, the sun shines everywhere. So my sister runs a PR company, and she'd been fielding a lot of things for me, and I called her and said, what do you think about Sun King? And she said, I think it's a great name. And I said, well, what about the Phoenix, Denver, Indy, Sunshine thing? And she goes, no, it's a fantastic name because you don't know how successful you're going to be. You want to be Indianapolis's local brewery, but in 10 years, you could be selling beer in other parts of the world, and nobody's really going to care if you were to name your beer brewery Indianapolis Brewing Company. Mm-hmm. We might still be on the phone because we'd been chosen to represent at the Hophead Huddle, but as far as, like, you know, going to a lot of places throughout the world, people would care a lot less. So right. Sun King has a really nice ring to it. You know, Dave's rationale was that the sun is at the center of our solar system. It gives all life to everything that makes beer. So it is affectionately king. And then the realization that naming it Sun King, everyone relates to the sun, and naming your brewery something king out the gate makes it sound like you kick ass from ground zero. So
yeah.
So it all kind of worked together.
So your logo, is that Mayan, Aztec? What do we?
Yeah, it's the Mayan calendar. During my year off to plan the business, I was looking for used equipment, and actually took a 2-week motorhome trip with my parents, who were retired at the time, traveling through the Southwest. And there were a couple of breweries that were out of business that I was checking out equipment in, like Almogardo, New Mexico, and Arizona. And everywhere we would stop was the Mayan calendar. And we'd already come up with the Sun King name. So I got in touch with a friend of mine who was a bartender across the street, used to work with me like 10 or 12 years prior, and is now our full-time graphic artist and does all of our logo and design work. And I said, Shane, we got this hush-hush project going on. We're going to open a brewery. It's called Sun King. I've been seeing the Mayan calendar everywhere I'm at. And he kind of pulled it up and he goes, there's four quadrants in it. We can put barley, water, hops, and yeast. I can make a great little face for the middle that you can pull out for branding. And the Mayan calendar is in that culture was all about seasonality. So it just kind of all fit and fell together. And then that kind of made the basis for our graphical exploration, which Dave and I both are huge rock and roll fans of all genres of music in general. So a lot of our art is rock art inspired and is stuff that, you know, is cool because we want to hang it on our walls. A lot of the stuff we do at Sun King is cool and fun because it's what we want to do. We're like, let's do this. Well, that's a stupid idea, but we're going to do it anyway.
Well, I looked at the logo and I hadn't quite paid close enough attention to it to see that it was, you know, it's got all the beer ingredients in it, and it's almost like a serendipity. I mean, everything just came together. It's perfect. And
like you said earlier, it was meant to be.
Yeah, and the graphic design too. I mean, that's one of the things that if you want a brand, if you successful branding of a product, and this is all tied together. Even though I'm looking at the labels from your cans, you know, and they're different, but it has an unmistakable connection to each one of them. You know, you can't look at it and go, this might be somebody else's beer. You just know it is.
Sure.
Well, and you were talking earlier about how you just try all these things and you've got three or four seasonals coming out all the time. And so when I was writing the description of Sun King, I started counting through how many beers you have, you know, and then I got to specialty and I stopped somewhere like 112 or something like that. I mean, I was just, Okay, I'm done counting. I can't count anymore. And I was still only about halfway through. I was only about halfway through the list, you know. So as I just said, there's 100 plus beers. And so, you know, I could see why, one, with as many specialties you do, you know, at first I was just, oh, there's, you just have the three basic house brands. I suppose, if, I mean, the, if you're going to the store to pick up a beer. And so, and then as I was looking through the specialties, I'm like, oh, this is exactly why the specialty and the seasonals, this is exactly why you were invited to come to Firestone Walker, because the scope of what you're brewing is just incredible. And you've already, you know, from lagers to barrel age programs, you know, you already named all that, but I just wanted to gush on that a little bit too, and make sure that people check out,
appreciate it.
Make sure that people check out your website.
We made 50 different styles of beer in our first full year of production. and like our house beers, Sunlight Cream Ale is nice. It's light. It's easy drinking. I always say if your mother, brother, cousin, or uncle doesn't think they like craft beer, you can hand them a Sunlight and they'll go, wow, this is really nice. It's very approachable. Great summertime drinker. WeMax, a nice malty Scottish ale, and Osiris's Hoppy. And those are kind of your major taste profiles. And if you've got it somewhere in between, then like you said, we do all kinds of everything and we try to do them really well.
Well, and really you look at the three house brands that you have here too, and 5.6, 5.3, 5.3. So, I mean, these are beers that you can go and enjoy and not, you know, and not have to worry too much about whether you're going to be able to get up off the couch after you've had one too.
But, yep, they're designed for that purpose. So sessionable.
Well, one of the things too I'm looking at too, you know, the Sunlight Cream got a silver medal at the 2010 World Beer Cup. So, I mean, it's not just your brothers, cousins, uncles who come over and who don't like craft beer. This is hitting a chord across the craft beer geek world too. So it's you know that when you get those kind of accolades from far out, that you know that you're doing something really, really special. It kind of leads into my next question was. So you decided to go to cans. Now, is this, do you have a bottle production line or do you just solely cans?
We do not. We are 100% cans. The only glass we utilize, obviously pints at the end consumer, in homes and bars and restaurants. We do have a growler program in our brewery. So our tasting room, you can come in and buy growlers. It's economical and environmentally friendly, and it is easy for our customers to buy packaging once and continue to refill beers, and we have a great growler fill business. But we started as an all-draft brewery, opened our tasting room to do growlers, and Dave and I from early on knew that if we wanted to put beer into a small package, we wanted to put it in cans.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, we had some friends at Oscar Blues and Bo Surly who were canning, and we were very impressed with what they had to say about cans.
Sure.
Dave and I had can collections as kids, like as teenage boys. We had cool cans that we'd pick up at flea markets or, you know, friends' parents, and so I had cans or beer cans around my room. So we both had can collections, and really with the can craft beer revolution starting to take hold, as early as 2002, I'd say it really started to take hold in maybe 2005-06 area. So we'd really decided and we firmly believe that beer is best put into a can, and that cans are the best vessel to keep beer safe and fresh. So, you know, sunlight, oxygen, and heat are your largest deterrents of beer. So no matter how dark the glass is, you're still going to get skunking from your UV rays. The seal on a can is a perfect seal. It holds a lot more pressure. Bottle caps, the crimps can leak over time and allow oxygen to leach in. So, you know, you've got sunlight and oxygen degradation no matter how well you package it in a bottle. The environmental issues were something as far as weight to ship beer. A can weighs 0.08 ounces, and a bottle weighs 8 ounces for 12 ounces of beer. So a 12 ounce beer in an 8 ounce bottle is 20 ounces of shipping. And we don't really ship our beer too many places, but we do on trucks and things around here. And then a can is 16.8 ounces for 16 ounces of liquid.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a better vessel. We always talk about them around here. And we had some pushback at the beginning. People are like, "Ah, well, I love your beer, but I don't like cans. When are you going to bottle?" Like, we're not going to bottle. We can our beer because we believe in cans, and so it really started to take hold after a while. And it's a lot about preaching the gospel of, you know, we're keeping out sunlight, we're keeping out oxygen. We self-distribute our beers throughout central Indiana and use distributors in the other parts of the state. And we have agreements with them that they will pick up our beer cold. They will store our beer cold. They will deliver our beer cold. All of our accounts are required to keep our beer cold. We actually pulled out of accounts in our area because they're like, well, we don't have the room to store your beer. I'm like, well, if you don't have the room to store the beer and you won't respect the beer, you don't need 10 cases of beer if you can only keep one cold. Order one, and when you sell it, we'll bring you another one. But, you know, leaving the beer out at 70 degrees to deteriorate means that it's going to deteriorate three times as fast. And we work really hard to make great beer. So we want to make sure that the people who enjoy our beer, wherever they may be, get the freshest, best, highest quality beer they can. So we have a serious commitment to quality in cans. Cans play into that so much so that we do those Alumitec screw top bottles, basically the Coors Light aluminum pint. And we were talking about, because all these small releases, I was like, Dave, we need to release these things. Can we just get a small bottling line? And we'll do small bottle runs of these high-end, low-volume beers. And he literally looked at me and goes, no, we can't. And I was like, why? How are we going to release these? And he's like, well, we can't put them in bottles because we preach the gospel of cans. And what does it say about us if we tell people that cans are the best all day long, and then we put our smallest volume, highest-end, low-production beers into bottles? And I go, well, it says we're hypocrites. And he's like, exactly. So we actually spent the better part of a year or so coming up with the idea that we might be able to use that package. And then we spent about 6 months in development with Ball, Cask Brewing Systems, and Oscar Blues to make that package and a small run device that makes it accessible to craft brewers to use. So all of our super rare King's Reserve, which is our barrel age series, our palindromic Belgian beers, and our sour beers are all going in this screw top aluminum bottle because we want to keep our beer away from the sunlight and the oxygen and have it be in a really great vessel.
That's fantastic. To re-engineer and reappropriate, you know, some of these macro beer technologies or techniques and putting good beer, good quality craft beer into it. Well, I'm a big can advocate too. And whenever I can get the same beer in a can, I'm going for the cans just for everything that you just said, you know, and especially when you're out camping and doing everything else, it's so nice to be able to just crush it. And then, you know, if especially like Oscar Blues, their thing is pack in and pack out, and Surly, nothing like a 16-ounce can of Furious. And you know, I'm looking forward to my wife's going to be in Indianapolis again here in a couple of weeks, and so I've got a shopping list for her to bring home. So I'm looking forward to getting some of that. One of the things you talked about early on too that I wanted to hit was, when you're talking about your plan and your philosophy for Sun King, was community involvement. And you've got a big section on the website devoted to community involvement. What part is that playing kind of overall in your philosophy?
Sure. Well, you know, Dave and I, the brewery that we worked for right before we started Sun King, was very stingy and very bottom line oriented. The one I worked before that would donate kegs to local art organizations or community organizations for their fundraisers and events. And so I kind of was raised when I was with Rock Bottom back in the day. They had this like, well, we're a company that's from Colorado, but we've got breweries all throughout in different areas, and we want to be connected to the community and be part of it. You know, the brewery that I moved to and Dave and I worked at didn't want anything to do with that, and that was kind of a catalyst for the thought surrounding it, because I always enjoyed helping out and giving back to the community. Dave has a family. He's got three little girls. I get married this fall. I've lived in Indianapolis all of my life, and you know, this is our home. We set out to really be Indianapolis's brewery and are now kind of growing our distribution to try to become Indiana's brewery. And up until this year, we sold all of our beer within 50 to 70 miles of our brewery. So that made it also very easy for us to say, you know, here is our community surrounding us. It's the people that buy our beer every day. It's the people who come to our tasting room. It's the people who buy our beer at stores. And we would get very early on get emails and like, hey, we're having a fundraiser with a silent auction. Can you donate a gift bag or something? So we actually, our first endeavor with it in order to fulfill all of these things was to put together a gift bag program. We have this great little silent auction gift bag that has a couple of pint glasses, koozies, an empty growler, a gift card, a hat. It's in a little Sun King cooler. Retail value on all the stuff is like $75. And we give those to everyone who asks, whether it's your kid's school Little League or school fundraiser or it's leukemia and lymphoma. So our gift bag started to get to a lot of events. And we also don't have a lot of money because brewery is a capital intensive business. We bootstrapped our business. So we don't really have a traditional marketing budget. And so we really try to work with community partners and get involved with the community, help support fundraisers, throw events with groups that align with our kind of mission, vision, and value, and actually our mission statement as a brewery. It was funny because Dave and I, coming from a corporate culture, didn't really want a mission statement, but we decided that our mission statement would actually be enriching the lives of Hoosiers one pint at a time. So that's kind of our thing. Not only it's kind of a play on words, but not only are we enriching people's lives by delivering fresh, high quality, delicious beer to the people of our area, but we're using that and people's interest in our beer to drive them out to cultural events to help raise money for community organizations. And it's actually grown to the point where we have a full-time employee who's our community partnership manager, and her entire 50-hour-a-week job is working with over 180 different organizations, charitable organizations and community organizations throughout central Indiana to do things and put on events and raise awareness. So, you know, it's kind of the thing. I mean, if you go back way, way back, breweries were parts of their community and gave back. And we really, through the macro beer movement, got away from that where, you know, in the 70s, there were like 50 breweries around the country and they just made beer, marketed it to you through fancy slick TV ads, sold beer. And now it's even worse because then they just send their money to other countries where their corporate conglomerate headquarters are. So, you know, I joke a lot, but I really think that craft beer can save America. You've got a bunch of people like myself and like Dave and like our friends around the city who have breweries that have these little operations that are community minded and are parts of their community and are selling beer and giving back and creating things that give people a local sense of pride.
I totally agree with you, and I think that's one of the best parts about craft beer too, is the community involvement, and when, especially the way that you're doing, you know, yeah, you may not have had a traditional marketing plan, but this marketing plan goes way beyond what a traditional marketing plan, you know, you can look at the macro brewers and see that that's just not working. People aren't connected with those beers the same way that we're connected with. And the way that I'm even connected with you, and you're not even in my neighborhood, you know, I can't get them here, but this is, it's still one of those things where it's, you're giving back to these people. And every one of these organizations, I'm looking at your website, every one of these organizations and any one of the people that are going to that see that and just know that you're there supporting them. And that is, that marketing plan for me is, yeah, it's part marketing plan, but it's way deeper than that.
It's like, I really like to believe that the things that we do here at Sun King are genuine endeavors that we do because we want to. Mm-hmm. And I think I've even talked to people who have picked up and recognized it due to community involvement and other things. They're like, you know, I'd never really met anyone from Sun King before I met you, but talking to you and asking these questions, you've confirmed this idea that it's more than just beer. There's something about it. You guys are involved in the community. You're at these things. You actually care. And it's weird that, you know, a product like a can of beer or a company's general image can be translated like that. But people seem to pick up on it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's just because it comes through with everything. You know, it's the feeling, the aura that comes around with it as well. You know,
people, it's what we do.
Right. People just understand it. So I want to just kind of get to the last question topic that I had. And
yeah, sorry, I'm a real long talker.
No. Yeah, that's perfect. One of the things that I was curious about is I like writing about food pairings, and I take food pairings pretty seriously, but I also just like to eat and drink beer too, you know. So I mean, So every once in a while I'll come across some brewers who, you know, it's either way, you know, like you just drink our beer with whatever you want, and some of them have just an animate kind of thing. This is what you need to try. You know, if you're going to drink this beer, then you should try that. Do you, what are you, what's your philosophy on beer pairings, and do you have any, do you have any suggestions?
Well, I go both ways on that question, because I am a person that realizes that a lot of people enjoy certain things and want to have it. Like Osiris is the beer that Dave and I designed and brew because it's what we want to drink every day. And I can drink that beer with anything. Mm-hmm. I love it. You know, most of the times if I'm having dinner, I'm going to crack an Osiris and I'm going to enjoy it with whatever I have. We at my house cook with a lot of Asian and Indian and Mediterranean spices and like spicy food, which also works really well with a pale ale. So those things go really well together. But I also, at the same time, I love food and beer and the pairing of two, and how one element of the food can be picked up by an element of the beer and creates kind of a magical dish. We do a number of beer dinners and have always from the beginning done beer dinners with different chefs from restaurants around town. And it's one of our best tools to convert new beer drinkers, because inevitably every beer dinner I ever do, there's a guy who brings his wife or his friend and their wives or their friend who doesn't drink beer, and they'll order a glass of wine, and I always make it a point to go directly to them and introduce myself and say, look, you know, I really appreciate that you came here. I understand that you're obviously not a beer drinker because you ordered wine, even though there's six beers that are awesome coming up. And all I ask is that you take at least a sip of each of these beers, because they're really designed to go great with these foods. And I think that if you give it a shot, you may not like all of them, but you're probably going to like at least one of the things that you try tonight. And if you don't like it, that's okay, because your husband or your friend over here or your wife will drink that. And inevitably, every time there's something that gets it. You know, a lot of times it gets all the way to people who don't like beer feel like they don't like dark beer because it's too heavy or rich, but you get into a dessert and you've got a bourbon barrel aged imperial stout, and you've taken somebody who didn't like beer, but there was some form of like fresh raspberry lava cake that's going with this bourbon barrel beer, and you know, the flavors play really well. You know, I like sour beers a lot. I think they pair very well with stuff, and that really crisp tartness can wash through a lot of fattiness and really reset your palate. So I think beer and food are fantastic to pairing and play together. When I finish this, I'm actually grabbing some various specialty beers, and I'm on my way to dinner with two chef friends of mine who run a local sushi place, and we're setting up a sushi and beer dinner for July, which I paired fish with, and it tends to be pretty easy because citrus elements go well, so you can do a wheat beer and a pale ale, and there's a lot of beers that go well with fish, but I've never done sushi before, so that's going to be pretty interesting to try these beers and see what they come up with. But the collaborative nature for me, and I have things that I like to pair together, but one of my favorite things is putting together these beer dinners with friends who are chefs and going and sitting down and tasting beers. Usually there's one or two of them, and they'll like kick ideas back and forth, and then you go to this dinner and sit down and try these foods that they've been like, you know, I did this because the hop note here is going to pull out this area, or this is really fatty and this is going to cut right through it, or, you know, even straightforward stuff where you're doing some form of red meat dish with a really great brown ale. You know, the flavors just kind of meld together and work. So food and beer, good.
Yeah, it is good. And one of the things that I really appreciate from those two is the take-home bits. And so for anyone who's listening, you know, when you're listening to the chef explain this, you're listening to the head brewer explain the beers, take those things back home and use them at home too. It's not sole proprietary kind of thing that's happening right there. Take it home while you're friends with it, and then that opens it up. You know, every time you go to one of these things, or you know, you have six courses, there's six beers and six different meals that you can kind of start to play with. So you can always bring those back home and just have fun with them. And then, you know, maybe you find another spice in there that the brewer didn't notice or that the chef didn't notice. You know, we all have these great palates, and so just explaining what it is that we taste, or trying something new. And sometimes it doesn't work, but you know, one of the things that everyone should kind of just say to themselves too, is that it isn't rocket science. You're just eating and drinking. If it doesn't work out, then you've got some great food and you've got a great beer to drink. So
I agree. I don't know. I think a lot of times people, it's symptomatic or problematic in our society. A lot of times people are afraid to try things because they feel like it won't work, but trying things and having them not work is how you learn and try things. You might try a Saison with something and be like, oh, wow, those flavors don't work at all. But your next dish that you thought you were going to pair with something else or some cheeses that you have around all of a sudden might be great. I mean, Memorial Day weekend, we had some cookouts and we got some cheeses from this local cheese shop and had some really stinky cheeses. And my lady had something to do on Memorial Day, so she was gone and it was the afternoon. And I had a Bell's Oarsman in my fridge, which is a really like nice 4% mildly tart kind of sour session beer. And I busted out the cheeses with a baguette and just went on my back porch and I cut up cheese and I drank them with this Oarsman and it was fantastic. I tweeted at Bell's about it. I'm like, I'm enjoying your beer with these cheeses right now and it's freaking fantastic.
Well, Clay, thanks so much for taking time to hang out with me. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And you know, for everyone who's listening, make sure you go to sunkingbrewing.com, take a look at, you know, their beers, read the descriptions, especially check out Meet the Crew section because, you know, they have a lot of fun naming all the things that they actually do. And then they have a lot of fun naming themselves too. So yeah. I want to find the guy who's got the pet unicorn. I want to meet him sometime.
Ross.
So we've got that. And then also the community partners and just learn how, you know, start paying attention to the breweries that you like. And then it just gives you another reason to love the breweries, especially when they're giving back the way that Sun King is to the Indianapolis or the Indiana community now as they're expanding outside of Indianapolis. So yeah. So thanks again so much. I appreciate it.
And thank you very much.
And this has been Hophead Said's Brewery Highlights. I almost forgot what the name of my podcast was here. But we'll catch you at the next episode. Cheers.